afternoon and welcome to the show. This is Mark Avery Finn for Shooting from the Hip. We're glad that you've been able to join us today. If you'd like to be part of the show, you can call the studio at 457-1290 and producer Mike Kane will get you up on the board and will give me a little bit of an idea what you'd like to talk about. Shooting from the Hip is a program of Sim Trainer. Sim Trainer is Dayton area's first indoor shooting range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road in Moraine. That's just south of the river, north of the I-75 exit onto Dryden Road, and right across the street from the DPNL maintenance yard. So it's pretty easy to find, even if you're not too familiar with that area. Usually pretty easy to get to unless something's happened on I-75 and things are all dorked up, which today is not the case. We have several programs available for people who are either just getting started or maybe even haven't even started yet and would like to get into the shooting sports, find out a little bit of just kind of an introduction to what this shooting thing is all about. We have programs that will help you figure out what gun is the best gun for you to use for self-defense and to have for even home defense, either that be for carry or just to have available. And we also have a concealed carry class, and there's a lot of those available, but ours is a little different in the sense that you're expected to already know how to handle your firearm. So we recommend that you've either had a private lesson or you have had our basic handgun class before you come to take the concealed carry class, because the big thing about concealed carry is really about the legal, ethical, moral, and practical aspects of carrying a firearm for self-defense. And by the time we get through all of that and we have an attorney who comes in and teaches the legal portion, explains the rules for use of force and all the different legal requirements associated with carrying a firearm, we're already at 15 or 16 hours. So we do expect you and we'll help you very much get through the process of learning how to handle your firearm in other classes. We do have some folks who come into that class without that that previous experience, and they usually tell us that they wish that it had been required that that they have that experience before they come to class. We also have an advanced handgun series. That's a 5-course series that will take you from mastering marksmanship fundamentals through the class that we have tonight, which is the spontaneous assault class. That's where we switch from the sight-focused shooting, where you're aligning your sights, focusing on the front sights and see the target out of focus, perhaps in the background, to the target focus shooting, or sometimes called intuitive shooting or point shooting. And that also includes a technique, which is where we got the name for this show, Shooting from the Hip. It's sometimes also called shooting from a position of retention. It allows you to draw and fire very quickly at a target that's at a close range, which is very typical for a self-defense situation. And as you then start to gain extra distance, put distance between you and the threat, you are already beginning to fire accurate shots. And then as you get to perhaps a better position of cover, a little bit more time and distance between you and the threat, then if you need to use your sights, then by that time you'll be able to do that. So we teach that technique, and it's not something that you want to do on your own. If you have not done that before, if you've not been trained in that, because it is something that can be dangerous if you aren't trained to do it properly. And really, that's not too much different from everything else having to do with firearms. They can be dangerous when not handled properly, and you need to be properly trained in order to do that. And that's really the primary focus of what we do at Sim Trainer. So if you'd like to find out more information about that, you can go to our website at sim-trainer.com, and all the courses are listed there. We also have an email list that you can sign up for, and our radio page is there at sim-trainer.com/radio, and that's where you'll find our previous shows archived, our podcast, and also our Facebook page. So if you'd like to follow some of the things that are going on, that's a great way to do that. One of the things that we like to do on this show is to take phone calls, and so if you have a question about firearms, really anything to do with the shooting sports, maybe it's concealed carry or the legal requirements, what you have to do when you purchase a firearm, or if you're new to Ohio, what the laws are here that are different from wherever it was that you came from, we'll be happy to try to get those questions answered for you. Let's go right out to the phones now. I'm glad that we have a call early. So we'll go right out and talk with Bill, who's calling from Spencerville. Bill, welcome to the show.
Yes, hello. Do you hear me okay?
I can, yeah.
Okay. I've always, as a kid, when I first started shooting long guns, I always went to my left hand and shoot out my left eye, and I found out, well, that's my dominant eye.
Okay.
So, see, the pistol, I feel more comfortable with the pistol in my right hand, and I've always kind of brought it over a notch, so to speak, to my left eye. Now, is that the proper way, or should I learn to shoot with my left hand?
Well, I wouldn't recommend either of those. There is a better technique for aligning the sights with your dominant eye, and that is to get your grip right, but then move your eye over to where the sights are. In other words, if you have the gun in your right hand and your left eye is dominant, if you just tip your cheek over to your shoulder, put your right cheek on your right shoulder, that's the gun hand, shoulder,
okay.
And then that will move your eye just over far enough so that it will line up with the natural point of your firearm when you have it held properly in your hand, centered between your thumb and forefinger.
Awesome. Okay, so instead of bringing the gun over to my left eye, hold the gun like I would be shooting out of my right eye, and then bring my head, my cheek over. Okay, yep. I'm kind of visualizing now as we're talking. So.
Yeah, you can just tip your head to the side and put your cheek on your shoulder. That also helps you to lock things in. We also have some people that turn their head slightly. So rather than putting the cheek off to the side and having the head at an angle, they keep their head straight. But then they slightly turn so that the left eye then is lined up with the sights on the gun in the right hand. And then that's another way to do that. That also works quite well.
All right. So I don't want to hold you up, but can a guy be as proficient shooting that way versus a guy shooting out of the dominant hand and the dominant eye? I guess with practice, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. With practice, that'll become very natural. In fact, when you come up on your target and you're lining up with the target, you'll just naturally get in that position after you've done it enough times. It becomes your automatic position. It looks a little different to people who aren't familiar with cross-eye dominance, which is what that condition is called, but it works very well. And in fact, one of the young shooters that we had come through our advanced handgun series is cross-eye dominant, and he shot extremely well with that and has been shooting regularly since. He cleared one of our courses in the time that was just remarkable, just how quickly he did it and accurately. So that's the technique that we recommend. There are other ways of doing that. Some people turn the gun. The problem with turning the gun is now you've changed the geometry of your grip, and you don't have as good a management of the recoil. So,
and that's what I was doing, kind of making the gun fit my left eye, and I was very inconsistent, and it's very aggravating.
Okay, well, I hope that works for you. Okay.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks very much for calling the show. If you have some question that you'd like to try to get answered, some of these things it's a little more difficult to try to do over the phone. Really, the best way to do some of these is with either a lesson or in one of our classes for specific things. But a technique like that's one of the things that we use quite regularly to help people that have cross-eye dominance. I sometimes call it a problem, but it's not really. It's just, you know, the way that your brain is wired. Your dominant eye is the eye that your brain chooses when you get a confusing signal. So if you're dominant with your right hand and that's the one that you routinely use first, that's the one you want to have the handgun in, because you're most likely to be able to do what you need to do under stress with the gun in that hand. But then you just need to adjust the rest of the geometry so that you can get that done and still be able to get up on the target quickly and place an accurate shot without having to mess up your grip in any way. So, Bill, thanks for calling the show. If you'd like to have a question answered, please feel free to call the studio at 457-1290, and we will get you up on the board as well. One of the things that I wanted to talk about today is a report that just came out from the Department of Justice, the Bureau of Justice Statistics, and that is the Justice Department's arm for collecting some of this the data, the firearms data, the crime data. And one of the course, if anybody that's been paying attention to this show or just It was, in fact, for a while, it was completely impossible to void anywhere on television after the shooting at Sandy Hook. There was a tremendous effort by the federal government to try to get people to or try to get Congress to pass some additional regulations to put restrictions on magazine size, restrictions on who can purchase guns from who. And in other words, what they call universal background checks, but they aren't universal because you just simply can't get the bad guys to buy through a dealer. And those are the only ones that would be doing it. And it wouldn't have included any of the transfers to between family members or as a legitimate gift or something that you inherited. There wouldn't be any kind of a background check associated with those. One of the big things that they were trying to do was to put all these extra controls in place because of a perception, I think, really a need to just feel like they're doing something, but also because they've had this agenda to add gun control for years and years. And they've really hated the fact that the gun liberty, the folks like me, the National Rifle Association, and most of the other gun owning community, in fact, anybody who's actually read the Constitution believes that citizens do have a right to keep and bear arms. It applies to them as individuals. And really, they should be able to carry a firearm wherever they're legally allowed to be. There's the new report out from the Bureau of Justice Statistics really goes against everything that the administration is trying to do. And it's kind of interesting to go through this report. The firearm violence is down. Firearm homicides are down. And there's... Even places like the Washington Post and NBC News are reporting that this report is saying, you know, it's good news. It's just simply strictly factual, and it completely goes against all of those arguments that have been made. Because frankly, less than 1% of state prison inmates who possessed a gun when they committed their offense attained a firearm at a gun show, and adding background checks at gun shows was one of the big areas that they had tried to do. I need to take our first break for the hour, so if you'd like to be on the show, and we do have some folks waiting, I'll get to you after we come back from the break, but you can call the studio at 457-1290, and we'll get you up on the board as well. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip, and we're glad that you've been able to join us this afternoon. If you'd like to be on the show, give us a call at 457-1290, and we will get you up on the board. Let's go right out to the phones now, and we'll talk to Lee, who's calling from Dayton. Lee, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Mark. I really appreciate listening to this show. My question is about wearing eyeglasses. Unfortunately, by age's demands, I've had to start wearing eyeglasses somewhere after I turned past 40, and it became pretty much mandatory after 50. And I've been wearing these what's called progressive lenses. They're not bifocals, but they go from near to far in a ramped version with no steps to it. It's a continuous focus from right. bottom to the top, mm-hmm. which really helps me see my front sight and the far sight, the far target. But is there something better? Is there an optician who specializes in working with you and getting a better pair of glasses that you can wear day to day and actually see better to shoot?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer. The problem is I need to do the same thing. I've had really excellent vision most of my life, but as my arms started to get shorter, I think I was no longer able to see the front sight as well. There have been several people that have come through that have had this, you know, that have had different sorts of solutions to it. One of the biggest problems that I've seen is when people have had LASIK and they have what's called monocular vision, where they have one eye for reading and one eye for distance, and typically that's set up with the distance eye as your dominant eye. The problem with that is you need to be able to see the sights with your dominant eye, and so people end up either having to shoot cross-eye dominant that change basically their dominant eye, which eye they shoot with, so they can see their sights, or they have to wear some sort of a corrective lens over it. And as you mentioned, the biggest problem is that if you don't have it on all the glasses on all the time and you need them to be able to shoot accurately, then the time that you might need it the most might be a time you don't have those glasses on, and that's not the best solution. That's a great question, and I think that would be something that I need to do some research on. I know that we do have some folks in the optical specialties that are members at the range, and we'll try to get some better answer for that.
Okay, great. Hey, we'll see you tonight at the spontaneous assault.
Okay, Lee, thanks very much. We'll talk to you then.
Okay. Bye.
Let's go out and talk to Jeff then, who's calling from Beaver Creek. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Question is, if I got a gun that's legally registered to me, bought it from a dealer, and I take it to a gun show, I know all I have to see is a 21 and over ID and an Ohio resident for me to sell it to somebody.
Yes, okay? And I mean, you have to have no reason to believe that that person is prohibited, but that's the problem with selling to an individual seller at a gun show. It's hard to know if it's not somebody you know already.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But if I do that and say he sells it, turns right around and sells it to someone unsavory and it gets used in a crime, of course it did. It wasn't registered the first time I sold it and the time that he sold it. The cops are going to come banging on my door, correct?
Well, first, the gun isn't registered. It's not registered to you, although there is a record of your purchase, and that would come through whatever dealer you purchased it from. It's not registered to you by the state. Now, if they have to do a trace on that gun, they would go to the manufacturer, to the distributor, to the dealer, and then they would eventually get to you. But if you sold that gun and you have some sort of record of the fact that you've sold that gun, that it was not in your possession, and you have perhaps some sort of a note that said when, and perhaps even the name of the person you sold it to, although that's not necessarily required, that's really where the trail ends, and that's one of the problems with a lot of these gun registration or the gun, the 100% background check kind of thing, is it's never going to catch those. We need to take a break at the bottom of the hour here to go out into the news center. So, Jeff, thanks very much for calling the show. We will be back right after the news. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290. News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip. We're glad you were able to join us today. We have a lot of people waiting on the phone, but if you'd like to be able to be part of the show, call the studio at 457-1290. And we will get you up on the board as well. Sim Trainer is the sponsor of this show, or is the actual host of this show. You can find more information about our website on our website about the range at sim-trainer.com. And if you'd like to call the range at 293-3914, area code 937-293-3914, we will be able to answer the questions for you there as well and try to get you whatever you need to do with in the firearms world. Let's go back out to the phones, and we'll talk to Kurt, who's calling from Lebanon. Kurt, welcome to the show.
Hi.
How can we help you? Make sure you turn your radio down.
I was standing by the TV.
Oh, okay.
Radio. Sorry about that. Okay, I moved to a different room.
That's all right. How can I help you?
Got a quick question for you. When I carry, how many extra rounds is it a good idea to carry? I carry a revolver. I know it's subjective.
Yeah, it really is. The biggest problem there is no correct answer for that question, unfortunately.
Right.
Having extra rounds is a really, really good idea. What is the capacity? Five?
Six.
Go ahead.
It's a 327 Federal.
Okay, all right. Do you have a speed loader for that?
Yes, I've got several.
Okay. The problem, of course, with speed loader is that they are a little bulky, and so sometimes carrying those is a little bit awkward. But having extra ammunition is a really good idea because you never know exactly what's going to happen. Even if you end up having to defend yourself and you think the situation is over, if you don't have a way to reload your gun, then you're not ready to go should something else happen immediately or not be as over as you thought it was. And so having extra ammunition is really important. Now, then again, how much? A couple of reloads is probably a good idea. But again, you know, that, like you said, that's very subjective, and it's probably more than you would ever need. For people who carry a semi-auto, we strongly recommend everybody have at least one extra magazine, because that is the most common source of a malfunction if you if there's a problem with your gun. And the if the magazine quits working for some reason, the fastest way to get it going again is to get another one back in. But that doesn't apply as much to a revolver. Even so, you don't really know what's going to happen, and being able to be prepared for that is the whole reason we carry a firearm in the first place. So having some extra ammunition is a good idea. That's about as non an answer as I could give you and not stop talking completely.
Okay. All right. Well, I carry two extra reloads, so I assume that probably is good enough.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, under normal circumstances, the statistical average says it's going to be like 3 to 5 rounds would be all that you would normally need to stop a threat. That assumes one threat. It assumes you're shooting accurately. It assumes there's, you know, they're not on some kind of drug that makes them impervious to the feeling of the shots and creating pain, and until their circulation stops and the machine completely quits working. So, you know, there's a lot of things that go along with that. And unfortunately, sometimes bad things happen and worse than just average. And that's, you know, you get an average like that, and you get some people who stop a threat without firing a shot at all. So there are times when 12 or 14 shots might be necessary. And if you don't have a way to reload and have practice doing that regularly, then you could be in trouble.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling the show, Kurt. Appreciate it. Let's go out and talk to Fred, who is calling with a question. Fred, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much. I've inherited a couple of firearms. One is AK-47 that has not been delivered to me yet, but one is looks like a, it says Chinese on it, and it has numbers. It has a sight on it, and I can tell it is an assault, so-called rifle. So I'm asking, what do you recommend that I do with it to stay within the bounds of the law? If I travel with it, learn to shoot it, learn how to clean it, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. When you take it from as an inheritance, there are some special dispensations on that in the law so that you would be able to accept that. Is it coming from out of state or coming from somebody in state?
One of my best buddies died over in Columbus, and just his sister called me.
Okay.
And he said, you know, Gary wants you to have these firearms.
Okay, so it's in state, so then even that wouldn't make a difference. There's actually nothing that you need to do from a legal standpoint, assuming that the guns are semi-auto. Now, if one is really an AK-47, a full auto, and registered as a full auto, and that would mean that it's controlled under the National Firearms Act, in order to take possession of that, you're going to have to get there's several things that you'll have to do, including going through I believe that even that transfer will have to go through a firearms dealer who's certified to transfer all those kind of a class 3 firearms FFL. But if it's not, if he didn't have a tax stamp for it, if he didn't have to pay and have it registered with the ATF as an automatic firearm, then there wouldn't be anything that you would need to do. Now, in terms of getting training, of course, we can help you with that. It's a good idea to know how to handle the firearms, especially before you take possession of them, just so that you can make sure that they're in a safe condition. If you're not even that much familiar with them and they're in cases, I would recommend leaving them in a case until you get with someone who can help you learn how to do it and to do it properly. Now, he probably
It actually came to me in pieces. It was a magazine, and there's some parts to the magazine, and then there's the rest. I mean, there are two parts, and there are two magazines. They look like about maybe 10 round magazines, but I don't even know what caliber it is. So I'm just kind of out in the dark in it.
Okay, well, that's something that we could certainly help you with if you wanted to come on down to the Sim Trainer Range in Moraine. We'd be happy to help you with that. We have an armorer down there who's quite familiar with many of those different types, and most of the people who are staffed there have some familiarity with the different types and would help you be able to understand that. If it's uh, if if it's a very unique or like a very old gun or a curio gun?
It's not.
It's not. Okay.
It's got plastic.
Okay.
Part of it is plastic.
Okay. So the folks over at the Ohio Gun Collectors Association would be who I would point you to for the old stuff. But we'd be happy to help you with that, and help you work through that and teach you how to maintain them properly and get you set up with
great.
It.
This is great for me. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. Thanks for calling the show.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
One of the things that's happened in recently is there's a stand your ground law that's been introduced. We talked about it a little bit earlier on an earlier show. It is House Bill 203 that's currently working its way through a committee review and so forth. And there was an article in Thursday's Dayton Daily News that addressed that question and focused on that one issue called Stand Your Ground. And I'd kind of like to explain that a little bit. And I have a little bit of a there's a few things in this article that I think we probably ought to correct the record on. Stand Your Ground has certainly gotten a lot of attention lately, especially with the trial that's going on in Florida with George Zimmerman in the case where he was defending himself, as he claims, or as the prosecutor claims, went out and inappropriately used a firearm and shot Trayvon Martin. There's an awful, if you've been following that case, you've been hearing some of the things that have been going on during the trial. It's been a different, in my opinion. It's kind of an unusual case in the sense of some of the testimony that's come through, some of the things that have gone on by prosecution. A key witness has said and done some things that tend, to me at least, say that there might be some questions on credibility. But the whole question, that whole scenario, starting back over a year ago, raised some questions about the concept of stand your ground. And stand your ground really means that you don't have a duty to retreat from some place that you are legally and you have your firearm with you. You don't, if somebody attacks you, your first requirement does not legally have to be to try to retreat to someplace if you can do so safely. Now, there's several caveats in that. The if you can do so safely one is a really big one, because number one, how are you going to know whether or not you can retreat safely in a situation and you have just whatever information you have, it's happening very quickly, you have 2 or 3 seconds to figure out what you're going to do, and then some jury will have as long as they need to second guess you and decide whether or not they agree that you had either retreated as far as you could safely or that it wasn't safe for you to retreat or whatever, whatever their decision would happen to be, while you have just a few seconds to deal with the situation immediately to save your life or the life of some other person. That bill does several other things, but the focus of the story on Thursday's paper was the House Bill 203 Stand Your Ground aspect of it. There's a lot more controversy about this than I think there should be. Stand Your Ground is really what it means is you don't have to have the first aspect is to run. Now, let me clarify that a little bit, because as we teach in our classes, and as almost everybody who comes through our classes agrees and, in fact, believes before they even come to the class, the best scenario is for you to avoid any situation that you can avoid. If it's a deadly threat situation and you're not there, that's your best chance to not be injured. If there's a gunfight, you have a serious chance that you will come away with serious injury. Now, if you're attacked, you're still far better off to defend yourself with a firearm. You're much less likely to be injured seriously if you're defending yourself with a firearm. But even then, you still have about a 1 in 5 chance that you could be seriously injured. And so avoiding any dangerous situation is by far the best way to deal with it. But suppose you've already done that, or a situation comes up on you, either an ambush or you didn't see it coming, and now you're having to defend yourself. should your first thought have to be, well, gee, I have to try to run away before I can legally use my firearm? And that is the real question, and that is the way the current law exists. So this is something that we will probably do more talking about as there's more information and we get. We're one of the people that was interviewed was the Dayton Police Chief, Police Chief Richard Beal, and we would like to try to get him on the show. We have had him on the show before, and he's talked about some of the things that are going on in Dayton. We don't know when that's going to be, but if we can get him to join us, we'd love to have him in the studio and talk about some of his views on that subject as well. We need to take our last break for the hour. So if you'd like to be on the show, call the studio at 457-1290 here during the break, and we'll try to get you on before we run out of time at the end of the show. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip. Thanks very much for being with us this afternoon. If you'd like to be part of the show before we run out of time here in the next few minutes, call the studio quickly at 457-1290, and we'll try to get your question in and get it answered as well. We were talking before the break about House Bill 203 and some of the things that that would do and the whole question of stand your ground. I'm a strong advocate of avoiding a situation as much as possible. And I think most of the people who carry a firearm for self-defense, those who have gone through the process to get a license to carry a concealed handgun, would agree that the best thing that they would try to do is to be away from the situation and not have to use a firearm. No matter what the situation is, no matter how well justified you were in using the situation, it's going to change your life. It's not something that people want to do. That's not the reason we get a gun. It's because they want to be safe and to be able to go home. And the best way to do that, the most effective way for self-defense, is to use a firearm in self-defense. Actually, there are a few things that are in this article that was in Thursday's paper, the Dayton Daily News, that quotes that are the typical quotes that we get always from people on both sides of the fence. Toby Hoover made a statement that said that she says it would result in more shooting deaths. She has no way to back that up. There's no data that suggests that's the case in other places. If you would like to be on the show, we would love to have you come join us. We've had many invitations out, but we don't ever hear back because, you know, we are going to deal with the facts, and we're not going to allow the emotions of the situation to dictate the outcome of the discussion, because that's just what we do around here. One of the things that she says, though, I have to agree with. Your first thought should not be to shoot at somebody. I agree. Of course, if that doesn't work, you ought to defend yourself, but the first thing you should do is to try to get away. I don't think anybody's going to argue with that statement. It's completely accurate. The real question becomes, should you be legally required to do that and let somebody else second guess whether they agree that it was the last resort that you had available to you based on the situation that you were in at that time? And I think that is the main question that this bill is trying to answer with respect to that one change. Now, there are several other changes as well, and one of the changes was characterized this way in the article. It says it would eliminate the 12-hour training requirement for Ohioans seeking concealed handgun licenses. That's not accurate. What it would do is eliminate the 12 hours requirement in the training. You'd still have to be trained. It would still have to meet many of the same standards. It's just that it wouldn't necessarily have to be 12 hours long. It would have to cover certain things. And in fact, I would really like for them to have a much more detail about the minimum requirements of the training and the qualification. If we had a standardized test, a bank of questions that people could take that we'd know that they knew the right information, I think that would be good, a standardized qualification course of fire. But none of those things are addressed. The focus, though, has been on the 12 hours, and I don't think that's what it should be. I want to thank you very much for joining the show today. We're out of time. Stay tuned after the news at the top of the hour for There Is a Season with Bob and Gloria. This is Mark Avery for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO.